Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, a happy Wednesday morning to you, and welcome to the Brad Sesmat Show. Obviously, this is not Brad Sesmat. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of Arizona State women's basketball, and picking up gigs wherever I can from one day to the next. And one of them is right here with you on sports360az.com. We're glad to have you with us today on a Wednesday. It's been a funny week in sports. The Suns played Monday. They don't have a game again till Thursday. The Coyotes are on a road trip. Obviously, the local pro football team is done for the year. And so our attention goes in a lot of different directions today on the program. A few things that Brad talked about yesterday, we'll get into further detail about today. But amongst those subjects, Steve Gilbert from dbacks.com, MLB.com, will be with us to talk about the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame will announce their class of 2017 tonight. I believe it will be at 4 p.m. Eastern time, or Phoenix time, 6 p.m. Eastern. And obviously, major focus on Curt Schilling, the former Diamondback, Philly, Red Sox, also Astro and Oriole. A borderline case, and not simply because of his baseball resume. And we'll get into that with Steve coming up in our next segment. Brian Jeffries, the outstanding voice of University of Arizona sports, and as boyish as he looks, he's been at it for three decades plus. That there should be a law against that, looking that young and being at the job for 30-plus years. But Brian will be with us to talk about the departure of Greg Byrne as the athletic director at the University of Arizona, and a few wrinkles that may, I don't want to say impede the progress of the search for the new AD, but there are factors that you don't normally find in a search for an athletic director, and we'll talk about that with Brian coming up. Obviously, if we have time, we'll get into a little bit of what's going on with the basketball team. And also, if time permits, we'll talk with him about the perception of Rich Rodriguez in Tucson. Rodriguez has been taking a real beating in Tucson. Greg Hansen of the Arizona Daily Star has a Sunday Notes column, and he's been really critical of the recruiting efforts of the Rodriguez regime. And his column last Sunday had some really scathing things to say about where Rich Rod is in terms of this year's recruiting in comparison with other programs in the Pac-12. So we'll get in all of that with Brian coming up later on in the program. Let me get to a few things. First of all, Brad is not here, and just a coincidence, Eric Sorensen is not here. Jordan Hamm is our producer today. I don't know if the eCam is working today. I'm looking up at the monitor to see if the eCam is in effect. The eCam is not in effect today. E usually takes that camera home with him because he doesn't want anybody else getting any publicity, but Jordan Hamm is our producer today. And yes, sir. You're there audio wise, but you are not there in terms of video.
Yeah, there I am.
Oh, there you are.
Got it.
Good. I'm glad they finally took care of that. You and I kind of bumped into each other at the winter meetings in suburban Washington.
A few times, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, today I think it's about as cold as it was in D.C. when we were there. Maybe not quite as cold as it was.
I don't know if it was that close. It was. Yeah. It wasn't horrible. It was just awful.
What'd you think of the meetings? Had you ever been?
That was my first time. I had a blast. I absolutely loved it. When you walk in and you have a bunch of baseball insiders on one side and, you know, big baseball movers and shakers the other. I mean, just hanging out in the lobby. And, that's the crazy part about it is, you know, for the casual fan, you can see so many people by just walking through the door.
You have to pick up your chin off the ground a lot of times
thinking,
gosh, I'm in the same room as. Well, we're glad to have you here. I'm sorry
glad
that Eric ran out on us, but Eric had an assignment last night. I'm not going to tell you what he was doing, but when you see this put together on sports360az.com, he's working on a fascinating story about a high school basketball student athlete here in the Phoenix area. And it's not your typical high school basketball story. This is one that, and you'll see it. It's obviously the great work that the staff here does is listed on the front page each and every day. And I would look for that if I were you because it's a fascinating story. Let me mention, too, before I get into the news of the day, and I know Brad's talked about his media podcast. If you haven't sampled that yet, you really need to. His most recent one with Ron Wolfley was tremendous. And I've known Ron a long time. Brad's known Ron a long time. And it was a great insight into the man, Ron Wolfley, and a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff about the doing a talk show, being a color commentator on an NFL broadcast. And we all want to know a little bit more about the people that we hear on radio, see on television. I highly recommend that podcast. Tremendous interview with Ron Wolfley. All right, the news of the day. There really isn't anything new to report on the Shane Doan situation. Coyotes general manager John Chyka was on their flagship station today saying that Shane Doan's Coyote, nothing's changed, people are making more out of it than it was really there, and nothing is imminent. Now, that's what you're going to say as a GM. That could change. Time will obviously tell. I get the sense from, I know Brad talked about this with Paula Bovin yesterday and listening to other media people around town. I get the sense that if Doan wanted to go, if he wanted to go to a contender, and I thought first of the Washington Capitals. Now, I don't know anything about hockey, and I don't know if the pieces are in place to make a deal. But if Doan had his choices of places to go to try to get a cup, Washington, I think, would have to be high on the list. They've had a phenomenal start to their season. Columbus, obviously, is a team that would be very much in play, I would think, and just in terms of their chances of winning a cup. But I don't think there's anybody in town, really, that would begrudge Shane Doan for wanting to go and take a run at a cup, especially if this is going to be his last year. The Hall of Fame vote does come out today. I'll give you my opinion very quickly on Curt Schilling. It should be judged on baseball numbers. And on baseball numbers, he deserves to go into the Hall of Fame. But as we all know, the gentlemen who vote, the ladies and gentlemen who vote on the Baseball Hall of Fame, don't always just do it on baseball statistics. And I'm just going to cut to the chase on this. Curt Schilling was not always the nicest guy to deal with. Everybody who dealt with him had some sort of issue with him at one time or another. He hasn't shied away from it. And to be truthful about it, there are going to be some people that are going to hold that against him when they cast their ballots. Some people are upset about his political stances. I don't like the things that he says. I don't care for him. I think he says some things he really shouldn't say. But does that mean he doesn't belong in the Baseball Hall of Fame? No, I don't believe that at all. I believe he does belong in the Baseball Hall of Fame. How do I feel about the Bonzes and Clemens and Sosas of the world? That's a tougher call. I guess if I had a vote, I would want to look at the body of work prior to the so-called tainted era of baseball. Prior to that so-called era, Barry Bonds was a phenomenal hitter, did not hit for as much power as he did in his San Francisco years, but still put up numbers that were Hall of Fame worthy. Same thing for Clemens. Sammy Sosa, I'm not so sure about. But there are a lot of people in baseball that think that when we get the voting results today, this is probably the best chance for that group of players, Mark McGwire included, to get into the Hall of Fame. And we'll see. Perhaps Mike Piazza opened the door a little bit. Although, again, Piazza, a lot of this is just suspicion, and there's never been much proven about players and their involvement with illegal substances. So this is all just speculation. We'll find out, obviously, about the vote later today. Basketball news. ASU and the U of A head to Los Angeles. I think this is a very critical stretch for Arizona State. Obviously, they have UCLA first on Thursday night, and then they have 2 days, basically, to just kind of go to practice and what have you. And I, to be honest, I don't know if they're going to – they might be – I know they charter a lot of their flights. They might come home Friday. I could see that. Them saying, we'll play Thursday, we'll come home Friday, go back on Saturday. However, they play Sunday night at USC. I really am a big believer in this team. I know that they're smallish. I know that it was a rough go last Thursday in Tucson, but I like the fight. I like the heart, the hustle of this team under Bobby Hurley in his second year. And I really think there's some goals that are out there that can be reached. The other thing, and I'm not being, you know, Pollyanna or trying to wave pom-poms, but just keep in mind, as we get closer to Selection Sunday, just remember ASU's non-conference schedule. If by some chance they get on a run, they're going to be in the discussion if they're around 18 or 19 wins because of that non-conference schedule. Am I saying they're going to get there? I don't know. It's a little hard to really grasp at this point. But if they did, it's going to work in their favor. Arizona plays same schedule, but they flip USC, UCLA. We'll talk with Brian Jeffries. Grand Canyon got a win last night over San Diego Christian. And I wrote a column about this. I know we're right up against a break. I think Grand Canyon needs to find a way out of the whack. They get a lot of attention in November and December because they're playing Louisville and they're playing at Duke and they're playing San Diego State. But once they get into the conference, they're playing Texas, Rio Grande Valley. They're playing Chicago State, Missouri, Kansas City. They have to find a way out of that conference. It's just not going to work for them long term in terms of even appealing to the basketball fans in this town. And I know Brad has said on this show that the West Coast Conference is not terribly interested in having Grand Canyon. I'd still make phone calls and find a way in. Because games against Gonzaga, Loyola Marymount, St. Mary's, Pepperdine are going to do a whole lot better for your profile than games against Texas, Rio Grande Valley, and Missouri, Kansas City. Baseball is the topic up next. Steve Gilbert, who does a terrific job covering the D-backs and baseball for MLB.com, will join us. Kurt Schilling in the Hall of Fame. Is it going to happen tonight? We'll get Steve's thoughts on it coming up next on a Wednesday on the Brad Sesmatch Show. It's Wednesday. It's the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munn in for Brad. You can hear me on ASU women's basketball games on this show, too. Before I get to Steve Gilbert, one thing I failed to mention in the first segment, I want to get this out of the way. Our best wishes for a speedy recovery to Craig Fooey, the ABC 15 sports anchor, sports director, hospitalized yesterday. We really don't know a whole lot. We do know from the people at ABC 15 that it was something heart-related. We are very hopeful that it is not too serious, and all of us send our best wishes to Craig Fooey and hope to see him back on the air very, very soon. Steve Gilbert, the outstanding beat writer for the D-backs for MLB.com, and I'll tell you why you should check out his work and MLB.com in a minute. But Steve is just now physically recovering from his annual visit to D-backs Fantasy Camp, and he had just enough strength in his arms to go to the phone and join us this morning on the Brad Sesmatch Show. It takes longer now than it did 10 years ago to recover from fantasy camp, doesn't it, Steve?
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping by next January I'll be feeling better.
I saw on Facebook you got one on the arm.
I did. I took one off the arm. I pulled a groin muscle. I'm a walking wreck. But that's what happens when you get older, Munster. You just body doesn't recover quite the way it used to.
Preaching to the choir. By the way, Steve does that not just for his own purposes, but he writes great stories each day at Fantasy Camp. And I encourage you to go over to dbacks.com to read his daily entries from Fantasy Camp. He tells some terrific stories about that experience. I wanted to have you on to talk about Kurt Schilling in the Hall of Fame. And we were both very fortunate to watch Kurt Schilling pitch for the Diamondbacks from 2000 to 2003. And I think this is the classic case of a guy who statistically, I think his numbers are worthy. I think he just gets above the cut line for the Hall of Fame. But he did not have, and I know that you dealt with him, I dealt with him, a lot of people dealt with him as media members. He didn't have the greatest relationship in some ways with the media. And there have been people who have thought, well, I wonder if the media is, you know, some of the voters are going to take it out on him, or they're going to be upset with him because of the things that he said and the stances he's taken since his playing days ended and his time at ESPN ended. So I guess the question is, from what you hear, from who you talk to, what's the sense about Kurt Schilling in the Hall of Fame when the vote is announced tonight?
Well, I don't think he's going to get in, and I think he will lose some support from what he had last year. This voting is a very tricky thing. I don't have a vote for the Hall of Fame as of yet. But it's one of those things where he's a borderline candidate, and there have been some things off the field that certainly it appears some voters will hold against him. It's hard to know because he didn't have enough support to get in before all this other controversy and, you know, some of his political views and his post about retweeting something about lynching reporters. He didn't have the support before then. So it's hard to say that that's exactly what's going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. I'm sure it's not going to hurt him. And I know that a lot of people really agonize over these votes, a lot of the voters, and they take these things very seriously and try to leave their personal preferences out of it. Certainly if I was voting, I'd really have to take a look at his stats and really have to study that. But I certainly wouldn't base my decision because I disagree with his political views or the way he expresses them.
I think it can be argued successfully, Steve, and we're talking with Steve Gilbert from dbacks.com and mlb.com. I think it can be argued successfully that while he may not have been the best post-game pitcher of his era, because he was in an era with John Smoltz and Roger Clemens, among others, his numbers are certainly comparable. I mean, not only for the D-backs, but with the Phillies in 93, getting them to the World Series, and obviously what he did in Boston with the Red Sox. He, if you gave him the ball in a big game, you liked your chances, and that should weigh heavily in his favor.
No question. And if you ask his teammates who may or may not have enjoyed being around him, nobody will tell you that he was not prepared or that he wasn't ready for every game, whether it was after the beginning of his career when he acknowledged that he maybe didn't take things as seriously as he should have until he had a conversation with Nolan Ryan. But they all will laud his preparedness and his competitiveness, not just in the postseason, but during the regular season. So no question, and an excellent pitcher. Again, probably a borderline candidate for the Hall of Fame. And that's when all this other stuff then comes to the front, and we find ourselves discussing all of that instead of just his work on the field.
I heard somebody say today, and I don't know if it was in a promo or in a tape piece on ESPN, that for the candidates who have been part of the quote-unquote steroid era, Bonds, Clemens, McGuire, Sosa, this may be their best chance to get in. As you talk to writers who have a vote, is that the sense that this may be the best chance or maybe their last best chance to get in the Hall?
I think actually I really believe their best chance is going to be next year when the ballots are made public. Right now they're only made public if writers choose to make them public themselves. Next year it's mandatory that if you vote, your ballot becomes public. And I think that by doing that, it will be more difficult to keep some of those people who cheated, let's call it what it is, who cheated out of the Hall of Fame, just because people will have a hard time dealing with some of the fan backlash and justifying not voting for those guys. So my I think that they will gain quite a bit this year. And I think as we go forward, I think you've seen some guys that there were whispers about get into the Hall of Fame already. So I think that helps guys' chances. I think the fact that, we're getting a younger group of voters in and some of the old school guys are choosing not to vote or are not have a vote anymore, as well as making the votes public, will all probably kind of come together to a point where you'll see these guys in the next couple of years probably even take get closer to induction, if not be inducted.
It's Steve Gilbert from dbacks.com, mlb.com with us, Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat on the Brad Sesmat Show. If I can ask Steve, and Steve is a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America, and I can tell you he takes great pride in his profession and the people that he associates with. Let me ask, what is the criteria? Is there a stated criteria, or is it just a seniority system for determining who votes in the Hall, for the Hall?
You have to be a member of the BBWAA for 10 years, I believe, and then you're eligible to vote for the Hall of Fame. And I think they've also, in recent years, come up with some restrictions. If you haven't covered the game in a certain number of years, then you do lose your Hall of Fame vote, just so that they don't have guys that are out of touch with what's currently going on in the game of baseball. So, they've taken steps. No system is going to be perfect. I know that there's a lot of different suggestions out there for how awards can be voted on, whether it's, end of the season awards or whether it's the Hall of Fame, but there's always going to be controversy. And I think there's no perfect system. I think they're certainly trying to do the best they can when it comes to these kind of controversial decisions.
You know, one thing that that Derek Hall, the president of the D-backs, has done a tremendous job with, well, one of many things, is he's developed a very strong link to the past of this organization, and in particular, the World Championship Club of 2001. Randy Johnson's in the organization. Luis Gonzalez is in the organization. Mark Grace was a coach. Matt Williams was a coach. Jay Bell has been involved with the organization in a number of fronts. Curt Schilling, to my knowledge, has been involved with one event, and it was the 10-year reunion in 2011. Does it bother anybody in the D-backs organization that he recently said, if I get elected, I'm going in as a member of the Red Sox? Does it bother anybody at the D-backs that he has kept that organization, and he grew up here in Arizona, that he's kept the organization at arm's length?
I can't speak for front office people. I haven't really discussed that with him. I do know that there was some people that were rubbed a little wrong when he referred to his Red Sox ring that he won in Boston as his A ring and his Diamondbacks ring as his B ring, just because it seemed like kind of an unnecessary distinction to make. But he's certainly made himself a part of Red Sox lore and has embraced that, it seems, far more than he has embraced his Diamondbacks roots. And like you said, he's really only been involved in one thing in the organization, and that was a brief appearance at that 2011 10-year reunion of the 01 team. So for whatever reason that he has, he's embraced his past in Boston, but not in Arizona. And I'm not exactly sure. I don't think there's ever been any kind of dispute between he and the organization. I think he was glad to be traded to the Red Sox when it happened. He was looking to go someplace like that. And when Diamondbacks were rebuilding at that time. So I'm not exactly sure. That's probably a question for him as to why he's chosen to handle it that way.
Well, you and I both remember what kind of mindset he had at the time of that trade. He definitely wanted out. I got 30 seconds. Let me ask a question about the here and now. We're about a month away from pitchers and catchers. Are you surprised Zach Greinke's still on this roster?
No, only because I think it's a difficult contract to trade, especially when he's coming off of a disappointing season for him. I think it's, they're going to take another shot at competing this year, and maybe if they're not in it by the All-Star break and he's pitching well, maybe he goes on the market again. But again, that's a tough contract to deal, and it's going to have to be somebody that with deep pockets, and maybe the Diamondbacks have to pick up some of that money.
Well, as I said, Steve wrote great things every day last week about the fantasy camp, about the campers. It was not, this is my day at camp. And I know this from having read his stuff over the years at fantasy camp. And MLB.com, if you want to read what's going on in baseball, that's the go-to place. Doesn't cost you a dime. And you got guys like Paul Hagen, Richard Justice, and I'm blanking, Phil Rogers. Thank you. I don't know why I'm blanking on that, but great writers all up and down the line. And Steve Gilbert's right in that group. Steve, I really appreciate it. All the best, and enjoy the little downtime you have left before it's time to get going.
Jeff, it's always my pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Steve Gilbert, MLB.com, dbacks.com. If you're a baseball fan, I recommend that site. There are great baseball writers all over the country, many of them still writing for newspapers. But MLB.com, I think more so than the other three major pro sports leagues in North America, has done a phenomenal job of making certain that their website has great, not good, great reading content. And trust me, I've read a lot of their content. It's tremendous. Brian Jeffries, the longtime voice of the Arizona Wildcats. There are a few added wrinkles to the search for a new athletic director, unlike what other schools have to deal with. We'll discuss them and the state of things football and men's basketball with Brian coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm gonna start this segment. I'm Jeff Munn, by the way. I'm in for Brad today. I'm the radio voice of ASU women's basketball. Been involved with ASU athletics on a number of levels for a number of years. And okay, you can say there, you must hate the U of A. Let me tell you a funny little story. I think this was about 4 years ago. We're doing a game down at McHale Center, and the men are playing like 2 hours after we're done. So I had to hurry through post-game show and get out so Oregon State, who was playing the U of A in men's basketball, could get set up. And it was also the night of my son's soccer banquet at Marcos Deniza High School. I could not get out of that building. I every 5 seconds, I was getting stopped by somebody I knew. And it hit me. I thought, gosh, they're the rival school, but I've got tons of friends down here. People like Corky Simpson and Tom Duddleston and Dick Bartsch. And the guy we're going to talk to right now, who I've admired for a long time, he's been a friend for a long time, and he never ages, Brian Jeffries, the longtime voice of University of Arizona football, men's basketball, baseball, softball, you name it, joins us on the Brad Sesmatt Show. You are in Los Angeles now, Brian?
Not quite, Jeff. No, we're leaving a little later this afternoon. But the reason I don't age, and none of us do, Jeff, of course, is we're on radio, so no one can see us age.
Wait a minute. Wait, that doesn't cover me, because if you saw me, you know, I've got gray now on the sides. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're just trying to look more distinguished, that's all.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and hopefully somebody will notice that. This the news of Monday, I guess aside from just the full news flash, Greg Byrne leaves for Alabama, but then you'd step back and you think about it and think, well, this isn't a huge shock because this guy's a rising star. I mean, if it wasn't Alabama, somebody else was going to come at him with that deal he couldn't refuse. So I guess on the one hand, is the sentiment in Tucson, well, this day was inevitable?
It is, and that is exactly what I think the common theme has been. Greg's name has come up anytime a major job opens in terms of an athletic director at schools around the country. And, you know, he had turned down some schools before. He, as he said, was all in at Arizona. He wasn't looking for another job, but I think everybody here knew because of his reputation and everything that he's done here to build this program to the heights it's at, that someone was going to offer him one of those jobs you can't refuse. And so Alabama did exactly that over the weekend, and he took the job. I know it was a difficult decision. I think all of those decisions are difficult. He was very emotional when he met with the staff yesterday to say goodbye, even though he's going to be around here for a couple more weeks, because he really put his heart and soul into U of A athletics. So he will be missed. There's absolutely no doubt about that. At the same time, I think that he has established a culture that hopefully will carry on and continue the positive vibe that he's added.
I don't expect you to speak on behalf of the athletic department of the school, but to me, there's an added wrinkle to the search for his replacement. Now, first of all, Erica Barnes, who was a student athlete at the University of Arizona, has been in their administration for a number of years, is the interim athletic director. But you have a situation where the president of the university is transitioning to a professorship, will be out of the office of president next year. Is the early sense that that's going to slow down perhaps the process of naming a permanent successor and put Erica Barnes in a position where she might be there longer than most interim ADs are in the office?
Well, Jeff, I think it could, just in what Erica has said the last couple of days, that there is no timetable right now. She has talked to Dr. Hart, the president of the university, and the president has yet really to put together a game plan in terms of how they're going to go about searching for a new athletic director. I think her initial public statement was that they would launch a national search. But you're right, when you have a president that is retiring from her current position, that does throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into the timing. Now, there's a very good possibility, and again, as you said correctly, Jeff, I'm not speaking for the university, but there's a very good possibility that President Hart will step down prior to the end of her contract, which is a year from now. There has been a search committee in place now for over 6 months that is looking for a new president. And I think there's a good possibility that before the first day of classes this fall, that the school will have a new president on campus. Now, the exact timing of that, we don't know. That still puts things in limbo here for a few months in terms of does the new president hire the athletic director, or does Dr. Hart go ahead and take that responsibility on immediately? Those are questions yet to be answered. But you're right. There's a gray area here now that We'll have to wait for some answers.
Brian Jeffries, the longtime voice of University of Arizona Sports on the U of A radio network, joins us on the Brad Sesmat Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. Brian, I'm a little perplexed at the mood toward Rich Rodriguez. And when the news on Greg Byrne was announced, a lot of people just jumped ahead and said, oh, that's not good news for Rich Rod. Look, I mean, the man went to 4 bowl games his first 4 years. Yeah, they had a hiccup this year. This last season, no question about it. But I get the sense, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm at a distance, that there's not a lot of patience for Rich Rodriguez among the fan base down there. Am I seeing it correctly?
Well, I don't know what term to use. I'm not sure patience is correct. I would have to think about that for a while. Two things have occurred here within the last, let's say, 12 months that I think have gotten people, you know, at least paying attention to the future direction of the program. One was certainly going 3-9 this past season. That was not expected, and anytime you go 3-9, it's a big disappointment. But let's go back to the end of the previous season, when the people at South Carolina were courting Rich Rodriguez, and he didn't deny some potential interest in that job. It didn't work out, and he stayed, and I think everybody was happy about that. But kind of what has happened, with Sonny Dykes up at Cal, as soon as your name is floated out there for another job, and if you don't deny interest right away, then a lot of people look at that as, oh, well, you're not here to stay. You're looking for another job. And I don't think Rich was necessarily looking for another job, but at least he looked at that briefly, and people remember that. And so you couple that with a 3-9 season, and people start scratching their heads wondering, okay, are we headed the right way? Because everybody wants to go up, as you know, Jeff. Nobody right. wants to go down. You always want to see progress. I believe Rich Rodriguez is an outstanding football coach. His track record certainly speaks for that. They just haven't had the talent in order to compete at the level that they did a couple of years ago. So that's really where the pressure is right now. He and his staff need to upgrade their talent. And if so, I think that he can coach them back into the bowl game picture, and everything will be rosy after that.
I agree with you. I think Rich Rodriguez, in a lot of respects, may be the most talented and accomplished football coach you've ever had down there. And that takes in Dick Tomey, Larry Smith. And I will include John Makovic in that, because he obviously had a tremendous resume before coming to Tucson. Let me transition to basketball. I watched the game last Thursday. I think anytime you've got a 7-foot player that can shoot threes in transition, that's almost unfair. But at the same time, and you've watched a lot of U of A basketball. How good is this team? Is this, can we say this is the most talented team Sean Miller's had up there, down there?
Well, in terms of raw talent, you could probably make that argument just based on their roster from top to bottom, Jeff. But because three of those players are freshmen and another one is a first-year JC player, it's probably too early to anoint this team as the most talented. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. Lowry Markkanen, the 7-footer you talked about, we knew coming in that he was going to be good. I think he's probably better than advertised, but I'll give Sean Miller all the credit in the world. And yes, he's a great basketball coach. There's no doubt about that, but this might be his best coaching job. When you consider that his top three scorers are freshmen and they've been starters throughout the year. They played 6 games without their point guard, Parker Jackson Cartwright, which means they ran a 7-man rotation. And they've been one player short, and that's Alonzo Trier, who has not been eligible yet this year, and he was their top returning scorer off last year's team. So you couple those things together, and they're sitting here at 16-2. I think Miller and his staff have done better than an outstanding job this year, and there's a lot of basketball yet to be played, but certainly the potential. If they ever get to full strength and get their 9th man ready to go, at that point, Jeff, then you can start talking about this maybe being Sean's best team.
One thing that has always impressed me about Sean Miller, Brian, is the old adage in sports, you don't want to be the guy that follows the legend. I think Sean's done really well with it. Now, you're with him on a regular basis, but from a distance, it looks to me like he's handled all that. And I know that Russ Pennell, Kevin O'Neill had their stints running the program, but in reality, Sean Miller's the guy that followed Lute Olson. And I think he's dealt with it about as well as you could expect a coach to under those circumstances. Is that right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would, Jeff. And I think one of the major reasons why is that Sean embraced the past. Some new coaches come in and it's my program. I'm going to do it my way. Whoever was here before doesn't matter. I'm the coach now. And Sean Miller came in and immediately the first thing he did was start calling former players saying, look, you are the program. You built this. He and Lute Olson immediately bonded. And I think because Sean embraced the history of Arizona basketball and fully admits on almost a daily basis, if you ask him, that without Lute Olson and what he did to kickstart the program here, he wouldn't be able to do what he's doing. And not many coaches are willing to say that, but Sean has. And I think that's why you say what you did and see what you've seen, and that is that he's been able to continue the tradition almost seamlessly, and at least that's what it will appear historically, even though there were those couple of seasons that he was able to pick up where Lute left off and keep things going.
Now, you've got USC tomorrow night?
Correct.
And then UCLA on Saturday?
Yes.
And I apologize. I'm over with the ASU women's team. I don't get to follow the men's schedules closely. But I do know that, obviously, that game with UCLA, and I've followed it, Arizona basketball, most of my adult life, and I know that in the heyday of the Lute Olson era, those games with UCLA were, you know, those are the games you circled on the calendar. And I'm certain that a lot of people in Tucson are pretty excited about the fact that, again, that game, Arizona versus UCLA, is one of those must-see TV type events, or, because it's Brian Jeffries, must listen on the radio.
Yeah, well, it's been a great rivalry. I look at it as one of the great rivalries in college basketball, and it's, you know, again, go back to Lute Olson and what he got started after he arrived. I mean, UCLA had been the dominant program, as you well know, even after John Wooden left. And so, you know, Lute was able to turn the tide, and Arizona became the dominant program there for 10 or 12 years. And, of course, that didn't sit well with UCLA fans, but it created this rivalry between the two schools that continues. And even though each of them have had maybe a year where they weren't as strong as the other, you still sense the rivalry. And now this season, when you've got UCLA at 18-1 and Arizona at 16-2 prior to the games tomorrow night, that even ratchets things up a little bit more. So it will be a great atmosphere at Pauley Pavilion. It'll be a great atmosphere when the Bruins come to Tucson later in the season. And with all due respect to the Arizona-ASU rivalry, which I still think is extremely intense, Arizona-UCLA is the one, as you said, that Arizona fans circle the calendar first.
Yeah, and we get that, and we understand that certainly. And, it was very intense Thursday. I could even feel that through the television. I meant what I said at the beginning. I think as I get older, I come to realize and appreciate more all the relationships and friendships that this old Sun Devil has with people down in Tucson like yourself and Corky Simpson, Mike Fader, who I ran into that same night of the story I was telling about, and all the other people that I know down there. And I can't go through a moment with U of A without thinking of our old friend Dave Sitton, and sitting with him and watching roller derby on TV is only, you know, only Dave could appreciate roller derby the way that it should be appreciated. Anyway, what I'm getting to is it's good to have these long-term friendships with our friends down in Tucson, and you're certainly one of them. Safe travels, good luck the rest of the way, and I hope to see you down the road at some point.
Anytime. Thanks, Jeff. Great to talk to you again.
Same here. Brian Jeffries, the outstanding and long time, only because he started as a kid, voice of the University of Arizona. He worked, by the way, I'll bet Brad will get him on that media podcast. And he shouldn't point out to Brian or point out to the audience. Brian, when he broke in with U of A, he worked with Ray Scott. Now, you may not know Ray Scott, but if you're a guy my age, Ray Scott at one time was essentially the Joe Buck of the NFL. He was the premier NFL play-by-play guy, and toward the end of his career, he was the voice of U of A Sports, and Brian worked with him on those broadcasts. I've got some thoughts about something that's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks, and I understand why there's a message being sent out, but I also kind of regret the fact that it has to be sent out. I'll talk about it coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. So, So on a Wednesday, Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. Our thanks again to Steve Gilbert and Brian Jeffries, who had great insights on a couple of topics today. Curt Schilling in the Hall of Fame. I'm a little surprised, frankly, to hear, and I was surprised to hear Steve say he didn't think he's going to make it. Again, if you judge it on the baseball, I think there's a case. And it was great to talk to Brian Jeffries. Let me say this very quickly in our last segment about, or in this segment about Sean Miller. I get the sense down in Tucson that they have put an incredibly, I'm not saying the media, but the fans have put this in almost unrealistic high expectation on Sean Miller because he is the guy that followed Ud Olson. He's got to go to a Final Four. And I'm sure that people remind him of that more often than he wants to hear about it. Well, you haven't been to a Final Four. I don't know off the top of my head how many years Sean Miller's been in Arizona. It's either been 5 or 6, or maybe 7. It took Lute Olson, and Lute Olson obviously inherited a mess, a program that was near death. I mean, basically, they had won 4 games the year before. It took him 5 years to build it up to Final Four status. It took him 14 years to win a national championship, and that was in his 3rd Final Four. They had a number of first-round losses in the NCAA tournament. One of them was to Steve Nash in Santa Clara. Another one of them was to Herb Sendek in Miami of Ohio. And at one point in the early 90s, Lute was very close to leaving for Kentucky because he just got tired of the pressure that was being put on him by the people in Tucson. My point is this. If you're a U of A fan, go easy on this guy. He's a terrific basketball coach, and you're running the danger, especially now that there's going to be a change in administration, you're running the danger of running this guy off. I really believe that. I think it's going to get to a point where, you know, if Sean Miller, he can't please the people in Tucson. If he gets to a regional final this year and doesn't get to the Final Four, people are going to say it was a failure. Seriously? You know how badly Arizona State would like to have a season like that in men's hoops? I mean, seriously, people, some perspective. It would be a shame to see him leave because of that.
Also, this is his 8th season.
This is his 8th season?
8th season, yep.
Jordan Hamm, ladies and gentlemen, in for E today on the E camera. Is that what we call it? We call it the E camera because...
You know, we don't really have a catchy name, but I think we should. I think there are some sponsorship opportunities in that.
That's true. By the way, let me mention this too, and these people are a sponsor of the show, and I'm not bringing this up for that, or I'm not being cautious because of it either. But you've seen the messages from the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and they specifically say, respect the players, respect the game. And there's one other respect, and I can't you know what that's directed at. And I think it's – there's a part of me that it bothers me that we're at a point where we have to, in advertisements for the event, tell people to behave themselves. And that's essentially what that message is. That's not on the Waste Management Phoenix Open. That's not on the corporate sponsors of the event or the PGA Tour. That's on people like you and me. Now, I haven't gone to many Phoenix Opens since it moved to the TPC because usually I'm busy doing something. I used to cover it as a media member when it was at the Phoenix Country Club. But once it got to the TPC, it turned into this free-for-all. Some of it's great. Some of it's not so great. And if you're one of those people that thinks it's just a good excuse to go out and get swacked for 4 days, take a step back, please. Because, number one, that's not what that event is about. It's a component of it, and it's a nice thing to have along with the world's best golfers. But it's not just an excuse for people to go out and find the nearest bar and just tear into it. It also doesn't reflect well on us as a city, as a community, as a sports fan base, that we've got this reputation where our golf tournament is just a 4-day drunk. And that's what the people with the Thunderbirds and the Phoenix Open want to try to kind of move away from. And I think it's pretty telling when you start a marketing campaign and your message is respect the players, respect the game. And we all know what that's about, and we know who it's directed at. And I just hope the people that message is being directed at will get that message. A couple other things that have crossed my mind over the last couple of weeks, couple of days in sports. I haven't been on the show since, I think it's November. certainly I watched the Clemson-Alabama game, thought the game was terrific. I'm not in the category, I don't think, yet, of saying let's do eight teams. And this is a topic that comes up a lot in relation to the NCAA basketball tournament. Oh, we want to go from 64 to, or where is it at, 68. We want to go to 92 or some ungodly number of teams. I've always said this about the NCAA tournament. I used to say this about the BCS. It's like a wedding. You can't please everybody unless you invite everybody. When I got married, the toughest thing that my bride and I had to do was put together the guest list because some people had to be left off. And it bothered us. Now, I don't know if it bothered the people that got left off, but we agonized over it. And it's the same thing, to a degree. The NCAA tournament, the college football playoff, you're never going to get to a point where it's completely fair unless everybody that plays Division I football gets in. That's unrealistic, of course. It's also unrealistic for the basketball tournament. So I get it. You would like to see an 8-team playoff. As soon as you go to one, Team 9 is going to start screaming. You go to a 16-team playoff, Team 17 will start complaining. There is no such thing, friends, as a perfect playoff system. Even in the pros, it's not perfect. Some teams get left out. 1993, the Giants won 101 games. Didn't win the West, didn't go to the postseason. The Braves played the Phillies. The Phillies didn't win 100 games. They won the National League pennant. It's not fair. You want fair, you just throw everybody in. Cancel the regular season. Get rid of the divisions. Just put all the teams out there and let them go. That's the only fair way to do it. And even then, somebody's going to come along and say, that's not fair. Well, okay, fine. It's not fair. Playoff systems aren't designed to be fair. They're designed to pick a champion. And that's the part that I think gets lost in all this discussion. Yeah, it'd be great to go to eight teams, and an eight-team playoff would have been kind of cool. You might have had an Ohio State-Michigan matchup in the first round this last season. But you include eight teams, 9, 10, and 11 are going to sit there and say, that's not fair. We didn't get a chance to prove ourselves. NCAA tournament, if you go to 100 teams, team 101 is going to sit there and say, we got robbed. Okay? The only way to make the playoff in any sport fair is invite everybody. The NFL, was there a team that felt that they got the short end of the stick because they didn't get in the playoffs this year? Okay, then here's what you do. You make the playoffs all 32 teams. Otherwise, you're never going to get rid of the argument. And you know what? It's unfortunate, but you can't have a playoff with every team that's eligible in. You can't have 330-plus teams in the NCAA tournament. Why have a regular season? I mean, seriously, you're playing 3 months to just determine seeding for the tournament? Come on. All right, I'm done. I'm done venting. That's every once in a while, I just have to come in and blow off some steam, and I've done that now. Sports360AZ.com. Watch for that Eric Sorensen story. And watch for all the latest news locally in sports right here on this website. And check out the Brad Sesmatch Show. Oh, you're already doing that. Well, thanks very much.